Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1909 with a release date of March 14th, 2014 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Ham radio is called to play a part in the Malaysian Airlines mystery. The DARC says the number of German ham radio operators is declining. A new GPS system forces the closure of a pair of amateur television repeaters. Steps 1 and 2 of the commissioning of the new ISS ham video transmitter considered a success. Lots happening on the FCC enforcement scene. And FEMA introduces a new wireless alert frequently asked questions webpage. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1909 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first and only independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from near Houston, Texas, here is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
The disappearance of a Malaysian airline Boeing 777 jetliner with 239 passengers on board is a mystery that nine nations are trying to solve. But during its early hours, ham radio was called in to help with the human aspect of the situation, as we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
When Malaysian airline flight MH370 bound for Beijing disappeared from the air traffic radar, the Emergency Management Center at Kuala Lumpur Airport provided accommodation for all next of kin at the Everly Hotel at Putrajaya. The Malaysian Amateur Radio Transmitter Society President, Mohd Aris Bernawi, 9M2IR, said his group was asked to provide a communications link between the airport and the hotel. 9M2IR said the Malaysian Amateur Radio Transmitters Society quickly set up a station at the hotel led by Zanirul Akmal Zaniram, 9M2PRO, with Aziz Samsuri, 9W2ZZE, as the team leader. The Malaysian Amateur Radio Transmitters Society also provided a crossband VHF to UHF link to avoid any unnecessary interference from the public services. An HF link was later added. The Negeri Sembilan Amateur Radio Club provided the volunteers for the station at the airport's Emergency Management Center. During the call-out, there were 11 volunteers at the airport and 23 at the hotel, all on rotating shifts. 9M2IR oversaw the entire process for the Malaysian Amateur Radio Transmitter Society. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, in Nelson, New Zealand.
Meantime, the mystery surrounding Malaysian airline flight MH370 continues. The German National Amateur Radio Society, the DARC, reports the number of amateur radio licenses in that nation fell by 3.2% in 2013. As of last December 31st, there were 68,191 amateur radio licenses, as opposed to 70,446 at the end of 2012, and 71,659 at the close of 2011. The total, including club stations, repeaters, beacons, special calls, and training calls, was 75,031 at the end of 2013 versus 77,089 in 2012 and 78,109 as 2011 drew to a close. This, says the DARC, shows a continuing pattern of steady decline in recent years. The report says, quote, "The number of new people joining the hobby did show a welcome increase in 2013, with 829 receiving an amateur radio certificate, as against 724 in 2012. However, this figure falls far short of the number needed to stabilize the amateur population. DARC says the number of exam participants were 909 in 2013 and 804 in 2012, end quote. But there may be some light at the end of this downward tunnel. According to the DARC, educational training call signs showed an increase in 2013, with 2,711 DN call signs issued. That's 183 more than in 2012, when only 2,528 were issued. The German N calls are held by amateur radio educators and are used by unlicensed people operating under the direct control of those trainers. Hams in Belgium appear on the verge of getting some new regulations. On Tuesday, February 19th, the Belgium National Society, the UBA, met with the nation's telecommunications regulator to discuss what is known as the forthcoming Royal Decree, or RD for radio amateurs, expected out later this year. Among the proposed changes are the disconnecting from holding an operator license, which is valid for 5 years, and a transmitting station license, for which there will be an annual tax. The intention is that the total cost remains unchanged for most radio amateurs, but a lot less expensive for those who do not own a station or who just want to use a club station. The full list of proposed changes are on the National Society's website at tinyurl.com/BelgiumUBA, and Belgium UBA is spelled as one word. A new global positioning system headquartered in Germany has led to the closure of a pair of co-sited amateur television repeaters. On March 4th, the owners of the Munich-based DB0QI repeaters, operating analog on 1276 MHz and digital on 1291 MHz, took them out of service after being informed by the nation's Federal Network Agency that they were interfering with the operation of the global positioning system's Galileo SatNav control center. As elsewhere, the 23-centimeter band in Germany is allocated to radio amateurs only on a secondary use basis. So far, no other ham radio operations in Germany have been affected. Steps 1 and 2 of the commissioning of the new ham video transmitter system on board the International Space Station have been completed and deemed a total success. Presently, ham video is transmitting a blank image with no audio in what is being called Configuration 1. The signal is on 2422 MHz with a symbol rate 1.3. Blank transmission will then move to 2395 MHz at the same symbol rate. These blank transmissions will continue until the next commissioning step, which is planned for April 12th. Reports from ground stations during blank screen transmissions are welcome and will allow further analysis of their performance and radiation characteristics from the ISS. They can be filed online at tinyurl.com/new-ARIS-TV. Recordings of signals received during commissioning steps at Matera Ground Station will be made available on the British Amateur Television Club server. Due to the increased workload of astronaut and ham radio operator Koichi Wakata, KC5ZTA, ARIS has had to move 3 schools back to its long-term waiting list. Planners say that they hope to get all of them rescheduled and completed by this fall. Also, there are several other schools that are on the list for possible postponement to the fall season. This is because for the period from May 12th to June 15th, there will be no licensed radio amateurs on board the International Space Station. In DX Upfront, word that JH1AJT will be in Myanmar for a Foundation for Global Children mission through March 21st. During that time, he plans to be on the air as XZ1Z from Sunday the 16th, but only during his spare time. Activity would probably be on high bands, QSL via JH1AJT. Also, get ready for ZS4TX to be on the air as 7P8Z from Lesotho on March 28th and the 29th, although this is mainly a VHF activation to explore possible F2 and trans-equatorial propagation openings on 6 meters, ZS4TX may also be active on 10 and 12 meters CW. The actual operating site is at 10,800 feet, situated right next to the Afriski Resort, which also claims to have the highest restaurant and pub in Africa, QSL as directed by the operator. Still in Lesotho, news that EI7CC is on the air as 7P8PB through April 3rd. Activity will be limited because he will be on a family holiday and will only operate when circumstances permit. Logs will be uploaded to Logbook of the World immediately upon his return to Ireland. QSL via EI7CC, either direct or via the Bureau. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W0EF repeater swap shop net serving Minneapolis, Minnesota. Even though he said he had no malicious intent, Brian Reagan, KF6EGI, will have to pay a pretty hefty FCC fine for making unlicensed broadcasts in the FM band and not permitting the FCC to inspect his station. Amateur Radio Newsline's Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB, has more.
Back in 2012, field personnel from the FCC's Enforcement Bureau T-hunted a signal on 104.9 megahertz to Brian Reagan's garage in Suisun City, California. While there, the agents heard the station identify itself on the air as KBRS. According to the regulatory agency's account, at the time the agents tried to inspect the station, no one responded. Reagan later told the FCC he'd been afraid to open the door when he heard them identify themselves as being with the agency's Enforcement Bureau. He also admitted to having operated the unlicensed FM broadcast entity for 6 months. This led to a notice of apparent liability for $17,000 for operating an unlicensed station and failing to allow FCC personnel to inspect the premises. In his reply, Reagan didn't contest the facts, but appealed, saying that he had no malicious intent, adding that he had immediately complied with the notice of unlicensed operation. Reagan also submitted a required written statement saying that he was now in compliance with Section 301 and no longer engaged in unauthorized operation. But that cut very little ice with the FCC. In its March 10th forfeiture order, the regulatory agency upheld most of its findings. Among other items, it noted that it need not demonstrate an intent to violate a rule to make a finding that a license holder engaged in willful misconduct, but based on his compliance as a radio amateur with that service's rules, that it was reducing the fine to $13,600. At the same time, it reiterated that, as a licensed ham for at least 6 years, Reagan should be aware that, among other things, radio equipment at his station must be available for inspection when requested by the FCC. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB.
Reagan was then given the customary 30 days from release of the forfeiture order to pay it in full or arrange a time payment method with the agency. If he does not respond within that time period and the forfeiture is not paid, the case may be referred to the U.S. Department of Justice for further enforcement. The FCC has affirmed an $18,000 forfeiture order previously issued against Nathaniel Johnson of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This for his alleged repeated failure to make his CB station available for inspection by authorized FCC representatives and his failure to comply with the restricted hours of CB station operation set forth in an official FCC notice. On May 14, 2013, the Enforcement Bureau's Philadelphia office issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture in the amount of $18,000 to Mr. Johnson. Although the FCC has evidence that Johnson received a copy of the notice that was sent by certified mail, he has not filed a response. Based on the information before it, the commission has now affirmed the forfeiture order. As is usual in these cases, the FCC has given Johnson 30 days from the March 12th release of the order to pay the fine in full, arrange for time payments, or file an appeal. If he fails to do any of these, the matter will likely be turned over to the Department of Justice for further action. A New Jersey CB radio shop is the subject of a citation from the FCC. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, has the details.
The FCC has issued an official citation to Thomas Wilson doing business as a Redmond CB stop of Epscon, New Jersey. This for its alleged violation of Section 302B of the Act and Sections 2.803 and 2.815B of the Commission's rules by marketing to consumers in the United States unauthorized radio frequency devices. In this case, the devices are described as 16 makes and models of non-certified RF power amplifiers capable of operation with both the 11-meter citizens band as well as in the 10-meter amateur service. Examples of what the FCC termed as the non-certified RF amplifiers observed on the Redmond CB website included such units as the Fatboy 900 mobile amplifier, the Zombie Products 500-watt effective radiated power linear amplifier 2290 driver, and the Palomar FET 450 HD export ham radio MOSFET linear amplifier. According to the Commission's records, these devices have not received an FCC grant of certification, which is required for external radio frequency power amplifiers operating on frequencies below 144 MHz and marketed in the United States. As such, Section 2.815B1 of the FCC rules prohibits persons from offering for sale any external radio frequency power amplifier that is capable of amplification between 26 MHz and 28 MHz. Redmond was warned to immediately cease all sales of this equipment in the United States or face punitive action that could include monetary forfeitures not to exceed $16,000 for each such violation or each day of a continuing violation, and up to $112,500 for any single act or failure to act. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB reporting.
Redmond was told that if it chooses to respond to the citation to challenge the factual and legal findings, that it has 30 days from the March 5th release date of the document to do so. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has developed a new Frequently Asked Questions, or FAQ, webpage dealing with alerts sent directly to wireless and mobile devices. The page answers such questions as, what are wireless emergency alerts and why they are important to the recipient? What types of alerts will be received? What such messages look like, and more. The page appears to be a truly valuable asset to anyone involved in rescue radio or first response operations. It's on the web at www.fema.gov/wireless-emergency-alerts. The FCC has approved a new call sign for a recently created Saturn station located in the Salvation Army's Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi Division's Emergency Disaster Services Center. The new call of WB5ALM stands for William Booth 5, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, and is dedicated to William Booth, who was the founder of the Salvation Army. The WB5ALM call was activated for the first time on March 5th during a check-in to the International Saturn Net on 20-meter phone. Saturn, which is an acronym for Salvation Army Team Emergency Radio Network, is the volunteer amateur radio communications arm of the Salvation Army's Emergency Disaster Services. If you live in the Boston, Massachusetts area and would like to participate in an important public service event, listen up. Volunteer ham radio communicators are needed for this year's Project Bread Walk for Hunger, slated for Sunday, May 4th. This will be the 46th running of the event, and hams are needed to provide communications support for the Project Bread staff, as well as along the 20-mile route of the walk. Those interested in helping out this year should apply via the web at www.mmra.org/WFH and fill out the sign-up form. If you have questions, please send an email to WFH14@mmra.org. CQ Communications has announced the appointment of David Shartok to head the company's advertising department effective immediately. Shartok will guide CQ Magazine's advertising sales as the magazine charts new ground as a part print, part digital, hybrid publication covering the entire communications hobby. Shartok has more than 25 years' experience in publishing, both in editorial and sales positions. From 1989 to 2002, he was editor-in-chief and web content editor of the trade magazine New York Construction News. Since 2002, he has been an independent sales representative working with startup publications and the annual journal of New York's Concrete Industry Board. He can also be contacted by email at dave@cqcom.com. When you need the sound of a working spark gap transmitter, the best place to turn is the ARRL. So when the daily National Public Radio series All Things Considered needed such a sound, that's exactly where it went. The sound effect was required for an episode titled What If World War I Had Never Happened? In order to provide the sound effect, ARRL Media and Public Relations Manager Sean Kutzko, KX9X, took a short trip over to the ARRL lab, where there just happens to be a working spark transmitter. There, he took the provided script and sent it by hand as the sound of the spark transmitter was recorded. You can hear the results of KX9X's effort when the show airs on your local NPR outlet or soon thereafter on the NPR website at npr.org/programs/all-things-considered. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. We seem to use the term the changing of the guard more and more these days. Sadly, we must use it once again this week after receiving a report that world-renowned Morse code preservationist Nancy Cott, WZ8C, of Metamora, Michigan, died on March 2nd at the age of 58. Nancy Cott was the former editor of World Radio Magazine and was with it during its transition to World Radio Online. This was the United States' very first electronic-only publication, ham radio periodical. But she is likely best remembered as the member of the United Kingdom-based Morse code preservationist group known as the FISTS CW Club, who was instrumental in bringing knowledge of that society to U.S. shores. As such, she operated the FISTS booth each year at the Dayton Hamvention and was a speaker at several seminar sessions over the years. According to the ARRL, WZ8C was a member of its A1 Operator Club. She was also an honorary member of the Texas DX Society and a member of the group's D-Exposition to Belize in 2006. She also operated from the British Virgin Islands as VP2V/WZ8C in 2007. Professionally, Nancy Cott was a field representative for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Survivors include her husband, Tim Lang. Those of us who knew her will miss her very much. The new Fox series of ham radio CubeSats are well on their way to becoming a reality. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Dameron, N8TMW, has the details.
AMSAT's Tony Materio, AA2TX, has released an update on the Fox CubeSat program via AMSAT's news service. According to the report, the main point of Fox 2 is to develop and fly an advanced SDX or software-defined transponder. An SDX system can be programmed to be any kind of transponder, but will initially operate as a linear SSB and CW inverting mode J satellite. This means using a VHF uplink and UHF downlink by default. As to the smaller Fox 1 satellites, all four units will use the same hardware and avionics. The universities involved in this project will supply their experiment cards, and the software can be customized for each satellite as needed. Once the Fox 1 flight models are built, the engineering team can begin working on the larger Fox 2. This will be a three-unit-sized CubeSat, which is three times the size of the Fox 1 birds. As such, Fox 2 microsats will provide a lot more power and space for the electronics. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TMW, reporting.
The Fox series of CubeSats will be among the most sophisticated ham radio birds ever placed in the sky. The University of Akron Amateur Radio Club is planning to launch a high-altitude balloon named UA-HABP2 on Saturday, April 12th at around 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The payload includes a crossband FM repeater with its input on 438.050 MHz and an output of 145.6 MHz running 2 watts out. With the balloon expected to get as high as 80,000 feet, the repeater will have a projected coverage area exceeding 200 miles for a majority of the 2 to 4 hour flight. The balloon will also carry a slow scan television system as well as a telemetry downlink. For the latest information on this pending repeater near space project, keep an eye on the W8UPD.org website for updated launch info as well as real-time tracking when the mission begins. On the air, plan to listen out March 29th and 30th for the United Kingdom's Worcester Radio Amateur Association, which will be activating call sign GB1PER for the annual Airfields on the Air operation. This event will take place on the grounds of the former Royal Air Force Base at Purtiswell, which is where the King's Flight was based during the Second World War. GB1PER will be on the HF bands only. More details are on QRZ.com. In DX, I1FQH is again active as 5V7DX from Palime Village in the central Togo. Word is that he will be there until late March on the top bands using mostly CW with some SSB. QSL to his home call sign either direct, via the Bureau, or Logbook of the World. BA3AX and BD3AEO will be active /B3 from U2 Island between March 21st through the 24th. Their operation will be 20, 17, and 15 meters using CW, SSB, RIDI, and PSK. QSL via BA3AX direct, via the Bureau or using Logbook of the World. More information is on QRZ.com. N5JC and N5JR will be active stroke HH2 from Haiti between March 25th and April 1st. Activity will be on 160 through 6 meters with a focus on CW, RIDI, and the 30, 17, and 12 meter bands. QSL both call signs via N5JR direct via the Bureau or electronically using Logbook of the World. JA6WFM is now active as YS1/NP3J from San Salvador on 80 through 6 meters using CW and SSB. He will be there through the end of the year. QSL via EA5GL. Lastly, N7QT, AB1UH, W4VAB, and N7UN will be operational as 5JOX from San Andres Island between April 2nd and the 14th. Their activity will be primarily holiday style on 80 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, and PSK. QSL direct to N7QT. And finally this week comes word that a group of ham radio operators using equipment at an observatory in Germany have received signals from the NASA's International Cometary Explorer Deep Space Probe. This is a spacecraft that was retired from service back in 1997. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, reports.
According to AMSAT-DL, on March 1st and 2nd, some unnamed radio amateurs were able to detect the beacon signal from the retired NASA International Cometary Explorer Deep Space Probe using facilities at the Bochum Observatory in Germany. After some changes to the ground equipment and aligning the receive antenna to the predicted position in the sky, the beacon signal could be positively identified due to its frequency, position, and the frequency shift due to the radial velocity. Initially known as the International Sun-Earth Explorer 3, the probe was launched in 1978 and became the first spacecraft to orbit the Earth-Sun Lagrange point. There it measured the interaction between the Earth's magnetic field and the Sun. It was also the first spacecraft to detect the stream of particles known as the solar wind approaching Earth. In 1982, the spacecraft was renamed the International Cometary Explorer and diverted to the Moon, where its gravitational pull placed it on a heliocentric orbit. In 1985, the comet Giacobini-Zinner was visited, followed by observation of Halley's Comet in 1986. While the instrumentation on board was still functional and fuel for more trajectory maneuvers was available, support for the International Cometary Explorer mission was terminated in 1997, though the spacecraft transmitter was left on. It was last detected by the NASA Deep Space Network in 2008. Its current orbit will result in the spacecraft returning to Earth-to-Moon space in August. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
According to researchers, a small propulsive maneuver and lunar flyby could allow International Cometary Explorer to be directed back into the Earth-to-Sun Lagrange point in a halo orbit and perhaps resume a science mission. However, in February, a NASA study determined that the required resources to contact the spacecraft were not available, and due to budgetary constraints, no further attempts are planned. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, near Houston, Texas, saying 7-3. And we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights reserved.